Here we are. This is episode 15 of the Kings of the Ring podcast. Unfortunately, MB can't be with us tonight because he's stuck somewhere on a train with delays or whatever. So, luckily enough, someone's come to the rescue here. We've got James Belmont with us today. So, how you doing, mate? You all right?
Yeah, I'm right, mate. I'm all right. It's good to be here at last.
At last, yeah. It's been a while, hasn't it? It's been a few weeks in the making, this one. So, all good. Been up to much?
I went back to play football for the first time in 3 months. That was quite interesting.
Yeah.
was the only goalkeeper to keep a clean sheet.
Oh, that's not bad.
My defence was useless. Kind of like Tottenham, really, at the moment. Jeez.
we are pretty terrible right now. What was I going to say? Just before we actually go into who we're doing, what do you make on Punk going to UFC?
How long you got? it's a surprising move because it's a hell of a transition.
Yeah.
It all comes down to that first opponent he's given. Mm. If he loses that, forget it. He's done.
Yeah. It's weird. It seems like everything's kind of been timed perfectly, isn't it, for this move as well? Like with him doing his podcast with Cabana, and then suddenly 2 weeks later the UFC contract comes in. I think he perfectly timed it to get more money. That's for sure.
Yeah, get more eyes on him, and he's got more eyes on the UFC now. That's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, literally, I'll put a post up on Twitter the other day. Because like I'll get notifications through occasionally, like such and such follows this person, and literally out of all our followers on Kings of the Ring podcast, we literally, I think 175 followed UFC the next day. So it just shows you why Dana White's willing to give him a go without having a fight, really, to be honest. So yeah.
Well, let's see what happens when he's given that. It all depends on that first opponent who he's given.
I can see them protecting him because they're going to want to keep the investment, aren't they, really?
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to invest in someone and then be like ruined within the first fight sort of thing. So
yeah, so they'll give him probably a throwaway fight where he'll just win on points or something, then roll it from there.
Yeah. No, exactly. Right, well, I'm going to let you introduce the person that we've done because James basically messaged me on Twitter and asked us to do this guy that we're going to do. So go on, James, take it away, mate.
Well, he was the franchise of WCW. He is the icon. He is the man known as Sting.
Yeah.
Nothing else needs to be said. It's Sting.
Sting.
We watched Survivor Series. It's Sting.
It's Sting. Yeah. And I believe we've timed this quite well, haven't we, really, because of the buzz that he's got now that he's turned up in WWE. What was I going to say? I mean, do you find it surprising he's taken him this long?
Yes and no.
Right.
It was a bit. Well, after WCW went down, he didn't like the prospect of going over to WWF at the time because of Vince's bitterness towards the competition.
Mm.
So he probably thought he was going to be misused and destroy his character. So he went away for a while. Not sure. What year did he emerge in TNA?
I think around 2005, I believe.
Yeah.
It was like mid-2000s, wasn't it? So.
Yeah, but when he emerged at TNA, he was used correctly for the time, and I think he done very well there. I think it was the correct move. But after that, it's been left a very long time. I didn't think it was actually going to happen at one stage.
Definitely. I mean, for me, this is quite this is like out of my comfort zone because I had never really saw Sting till 97 when he was Crow Sting. I never saw any of his Surfer Dude stuff. So it you know, watching these matches for me without knowing much about the character was definitely interesting, to say the least. So where should we start? Should we start with Sting Flair at Great American Bash 1990?
Yeah, because that's where he was a made man after that. So yeah, we'll start with that one.
So what was the build up to this? Again, like as I say, like you'll know more of the background than what I will. So
well, it's limited because you know a lot of it's quite old now. But basically, the build up was that he had a very good rivalry with Flair, wrestled him quite a few times,
mm-hmm.
and after the last title match at NWA, it fell into disrepute at the end, and this is like the follow on from that.
Right.
Because the horsemen all got involved in that, and that was a stipulation in this one where Arn Anderson was handcuffed to Ali Gante, or however you say his name, the big dude.
Who's Giant Gonzalez in WWE,
that's,
wasn't he?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
And then it just went on from there.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I mean, first comment before the matches start was, fuck me, JR looked young watching this match.
Yes. I said that. I literally just, a young JR on commentary.
Yeah. And, I
couldn't believe it.
Obviously, as well, there's a huge fight field going into this one. I picked up on that straight away. I mean, this would have been like a really big event for WCW, wouldn't it, at the time?
Yeah, put them on the map for sure.
Yeah,
it had that big match feel, had the buzz. The crowd was well into it from start to finish. So
yeah, definitely. As I wrote, Giant Gonzalez when he came down to handcuff himself to Arn Anderson.
Yeah.
Start of the match, Sting in control very early. Military press by him. Flair takes a breather.
Yeah.
Flair gains control with a thumb to the eye, which, you know, classic Flair, isn't it? Still suplexed by Flair, and then Sting just pops straight back up, doesn't he, I believe?
Yeah, he just stands straight back up. There's just no sells it. It's like, I was going to say, it's like watching The Ultimate Warrior, but with a lot more ability. Because he was a Blade Runner, so you can see the similarities in the look.
Yeah, yeah.
But Sting, I mean, had it, you know.
Yeah, because Sting and Warrior were tag partners, weren't they? Early in career, I believe. He just no-sells it. And you can tell that he is the face of WCW at that point. It's probably the best way to put it, isn't he? He's like that. He's the hero. Sting comes back. Flair goes to the injured knee. Flair starts taking control of the match. Sting goes for a figure four, which I thought was a nice little touch.
Yeah, nice little move.
Flair makes it to the ropes, and then I wrote Super Sting for some reason. Why did I write Super Sting? I watched these a couple of weeks ago.
It's because he like starts Nelson and stuff, like the amount of chops he just stands there and takes.
That's it. That's exactly what it is. Yeah,
the state of him at the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, me and Envy always say, like, I'd hate to ever have to sit there and take a chop. That never looks fun. Like, I mean, out of all the moves in wrestling, I always find a chop looks incredibly painful. So to no sell, it's quite impressive. Sting gets some mounted punches. I believe Flair goes to the top rope, and as usual, he gets cut off.
Yeah, he gets cut off and shut down.
I always wonder what Flair would actually do if he wasn't cut off.
The only time I think it worked was his last match, funny enough, against Shawn Michaels with the axe handle, wasn't it?
That was, yeah.
That was the only time it worked.
Yeah. Me and a mate of mine, Marcus, like, he's another guy we talk to regularly about wrestling. We always said that he'd get on the top rope, realise no one's going to put him down, just get off because he wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And just thought that'd be quite funny to watch. Flair gets back in control. I wrote at this point a very good story is being told by the pair of them. Sting starts getting mad, gets a body press. Irish Rip, Flair goes over the top rope in the spot that him, Triple H and Shawn Michaels are quite famous for.
Oh, well, turning him inside out.
Yeah.
Went onto the apron for that clothesline, just knocks him through. Look, yeah.
Yeah.
Great spot.
Sting catches him with a clothesline as he comes back, which I wrote was a nice spot. Stinger splash. Scorpion Deathlock. Flair makes the ropes. After faces and heels then start fighting.
There's a fight on a rampway.
Do you know what, JR, you know, there's a reason people credit him a lot, because even back here, he was good at what he does, if you know what I mean. He was very play-by-play. I don't think there's anyone better than him, to be honest. And even back here, you could see, even early on in his career, he was head and shoulders better than probably what WWE had at the time of Vince McMahon and, I believe, probably like Jesse Ventura or someone at the time.
Yeah, no, I love Jesse Ventura. Vince McMahon, it was too inconsistent for me.
Yeah, yeah. So. I mean, Vince, I don't know what it was with Vince. Sometimes he was okay, but he was more of he's not really a play-by-play, is he? He's more of a, you know, what a manoeuvre and all of that sort of stuff.
He's a bit of a tweener as well sometimes. It's a bit confusing.
Yeah, definitely. Flair gets a backslide for two, and then Sting gets the inside cradle and gets a three count. All right, good story. An okay match. I mean, what did you give it out of 10?
I gave it an 8 out of 10, that one, just because the big match feel, and it's a great story between a proper heel and a proper face.
Okay. All right. I gave it not considerably lower, but I gave it a 6 out of 10 because for me, I don't know the backstory, so I'm just watching it from a match perspective.
Yeah.
And I gave it like middle of the road. I thought it was about a 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, that was obviously the match that made Sting, wasn't it? As you said earlier.
Yeah, definitely. Even Ric Flair rated him and said he's a great worker, and I loved to wrestle with him. And yeah, when he dropped the belt to Sting, not drop it, but pass it on to him.
Yeah,
he skyrocketed. That was him made after that.
Yeah, because there was no there was no overbooked finish. That was just a very simple 1-2-3. Won the match clean, which I don't think happens enough later on in WCW, if you know what I mean.
There's a lot of run-ins and disqualification finishes.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, Flair, obviously at the time, very much a made man, probably the biggest name in the industry, arguably at that point. Definitely WCW's biggest name at that point. If he's willing to put the belt on him, he obviously saw something in him, that for sure.
Yeah, the crazy thing was, Flair was only a 6-time champion at this point. This shows how long ago it was.
Yeah, Jesus. Because, I mean, as I say, I wasn't an avid WCW fan. I used to watch it between 96 and 98 when I used to have cable at my old house. Yeah. And after Cartoon Network on a Friday, Nitro used to come on. And I didn't have Sky, so I used to watch that to get my fix of wrestling. But as I started watching, was as the NWO was there. Sting was just up in the rafters, not speaking. But, I mean, we'll get to that later, obviously. Yeah. Next one, I mean, that was your choice, that first one. Next one I went with, I mean, when you asked about Sting, I mean, as I say, for me, I don't know loads about Sting because I wasn't a WCW guy. But I looked on so many forums about Sting, and there was a match that I was constantly going on about, and that was Sting versus Cactus Jack at Beach Blast. I was quite surprised Cactus Jack was in a main event in 1992, if I'm honest.
Well, he was... he was pretty over back then, but not to a huge degree, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But people knew him
because
of what he's done and when he got his ear messed up and stuff. Because they'd look at him and think, that guy's nuts.
Yeah.
So WCW gave him a shot in the main event spot. I think he took it really well.
Yeah, I did. One of the first notes I made on the match was highly acclaimed in most Sting Best Match articles, this match, which is why I thought I'd put it in now.
Yeah.
JR very early on talks about the fact that Cactus Jack isn't right in the head. So to speak.
Straight
out the gate. Very young looking Mick Foley as well. And the thing I find quite funny was they said that he was like 300 pounds before he came out, which is heavier than what he is now, but yet he looked a lot better
he was in much better shape, but he was heavy. Yeah, apparently it was like 305 pounds, but my main note was he was billed from Truth or Consequences Mexico.
That was it. Yeah.
I was like, all right then.
So some of the places they came up with throughout wrestling, you know, like Dudleyville, obviously, and stuff like that. They do come out with some funny ones, and that was definitely one. Why wasn't the title defended? Do you have any idea?
Honestly, no. I think it was just there was something running alongside this match. I think they branched off to a story later on or something about the title because they kept mentioning Harley Race, I think.
Yeah, so, they did, didn't they?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, do you want a couple of spots in this match?
No, you can roll with it. I'll jump in when I can.
You jump in when you can. All right, mate. Okay. Brawl to start. Which, you know, typical Mick Foley type of match, this, isn't it? You're not going to get just, collar and elbows.
Just out of control fighting. He just waits on the ramp for Sting to come down, then that's it.
Then Irish whipped into the ropes on, like, it was quite weird, the setup, wasn't it? Because the aisle just went straight to the ring. There was no steps leading up to it. So this match, I mean, this first spot that I noted, whilst they was on the ramp, he Irish whips him off the rope and he comes back and back body drops him on the ramp.
Yeah, and then he followed up the bulldog.
Sting misses the Stinger Splash, and there's no padding around the outside.
Yeah, he went down quite hard on that one.
elbow from the apron by Cactus. You know, signature spot there. Neck breaker on the floor. I mean, a lot of these are, you know, quite, when you think about them, quite gruesome spots is probably the best way to put it. Like, because there isn't any padding out there. So
because they had, like, the metal railings as well.
They don't
have, like, these barriers that they have now. Back then, it was just, like, metal railing and concrete floor, and that was it.
Yeah, bumping on that couldn't have been fun. Cactus is in control of the match, go into the crowd. This is Falls Count Anywhere as well, isn't it, this match? Sorry, I forgot to say that at the beginning. Suplex in the crowd for a two count from Sting. Back in the ring, Cactus nails a really good clothesline. Cactus back in control. I wrote here, JR and Jesse the Body Ventura are very good on commentary throughout this match. They're not over the top or anything like that, which... As I say, from what I've seen of WCW, it was Tony Schiavone, Mike Tenay, and Destiny, Dusty Rhodes, you know. also, is Bill Alfonso the ref?
He might well have been, but I can't say for sure.
Yeah, well, I'm glad he's a ref and not sitting there blowing on that fucking whistle. I don't know why that was part of a gimmick. That was fucking awful. Cactus nailing Sting with a chair, which was a bit taboo back in these days, wasn't it? Chair shots and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
It was quite a few times as well.
Yeah. Back suplex on the floor. Sting gets flapjacked onto the railings.
Catches him when he's trying to do the Stinger Splash and just drives him.
Yeah.
Like head first, right into the... Yeah, that was pretty nasty.
Yeah, and then I just wrote a really poor pile driver by Cactus Jack. I don't know if it was a bit of a botch or something, but it looked terrible.
Yeah, I was a bit on the fence. I wasn't sure if it was a botch or... Because JL was saying, he's holding his knee or whatever, so I don't know if that JL was covering for him or...
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought, to be honest with you. Cactus aims for an elbow off the top. Sting moves. Sting starts his comeback. Sting then gets the chair and starts nailing Cactus with him. Sting attempts a scorpion, but Cactus rolls through.
Yeah, they both fall off the ramp. It's like a 10-foot drop.
Yeah. sorry, I forgot about that. Yeah,
it's the strangest setup I've ever seen.
Yeah, definitely. And then Cactus gets a double arm DDT for a two count. And then Sting hits a clothesline from the top rope for a three count. I mean, did you think that match finished a bit suddenly?
It was a bit abrupt, but it started to get a bit messy towards the end, so I'm kind of glad they finished it when they did, so they didn't stink out the place.
Yeah, I'll call an audible and finish it early, I suppose.
Yeah, because it wasn't a finishing manoeuvre. He just like went like warrior, clotheslined him once, and flew off the top and clotheslined him again. That was it.
Yeah, that's it. So, I mean, I gave it 5.5 out of 10 because I thought it was a very anticlimactic ending, but the match did hold my interest.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm being too generous, but I'll give it a 6.
You're giving it a 6? No, that's fair enough. You've got to just mark it how you want to mark it, mate. That's the main thing. What's next then? Yeah, I mean, next in the timeline, I've got Sting versus Hogan, Starrcade '97. I mean, one thing I want to comment on, this was a really good story for WCW.
The build-up was amazing.
It was brilliant. I really, really enjoyed it. I mean, when do you think about in wrestling 18 months without someone wrestling but still holding an interest? You know? it's really, really well done, actually. And, you know, the story was good in the fact that it was the evil villain who had been running the company roughshod, and Sting's just there to represent WCW, essentially. I mean, one thing I noticed about that pay-per-view, I mean, I watched it on the network, so I watched the Eddie Guerrero-Dean Malenko match at the beginning, because why wouldn't I?
That's pure wrestling right there. That's fantastic stuff.
Exactly. I mean, me and Envy are gutted, because last week we sat down. This is why I've called you twice today to make sure it's recorded. We sat down, we recorded the Eddie Guerrero podcast. We was on here for an hour and a half talking.
Yeah.
And then I went to go to Podomatic, not Podomatic, went to go to Audacity, and nothing.
Gone.
The computer didn't record it. So we've got to do it at some point, but we've got the Guerrero-Malenko classic from ECW to cover. So, you know, there's a bit of a teaser for people when we do get that done.
Nice.
I wrote as well, like, this is their WrestleMania, isn't it? Starrcade, essentially.
Yeah, and this is where I was going to put a bit of a down on it, I'm afraid.
No, that's
to
fine,
me,
mate.
You know, I don't want to sound like a bit of a cynic, but as amazing as the build-up was with all the promos and stuff and then him making brief appearances for all that time.
Yeah.
The match was...
Yeah, mate, yeah. I mean, we'll get into that, but I completely agree. I think the story was really well done until the finish of the match.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, Hogan was pissing about the fans or whatever, and then it was a bit, I don't know, the match was very slow, too slow.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I'll say publicly, I mean, I'll say it to you, I mean, me and Envy, I'm sure I've said it before on previous podcasts, I can't stand Hulk Hogan.
No.
Even watching as a kid, he was never really my guy. I was more like Bret Hart. I enjoyed more of the wrestlers, you know, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart. And once Hogan went to WCW, you could just see he was all out for himself. He didn't really care about the company. He just cared about his meal ticket, essentially. And even in this match, you know, we'll get to the end. You know, once we get to the end, we can discuss it more. But what needed to happen is he needed to put Sting over clean.
Yeah, right. Without all the shenanigans and all that.
Exactly. I mean, again, before the match, Bruce Buffer, completely forgot about him.
Great announcer, though.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He was. I mean, one thing I've got to say, the intro monologues were seriously over the top, weren't they? Like, they went on forever when he was talking about people as they came down the aisle.
Oh, right? Yeah, it's like every single bit of information he could get is, yeah, just stop. How much do they weigh? Where are they from?
Yeah.
That's it.
that's all I need to know, and if they're a champion or if they're a challenger. That's it. That's all I need.
Because at the end, it's a bit like...
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah. I agree with you. Another thing I wrote is I don't fully understand why WWE didn't use Sting's WCW thing.
Because Vince is weird like that. He doesn't like using other people's ideas and visions. It has to be his.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, for me, the music he came down to at Survivor Series, I just thought Raven. Like,
oh, because that crow at the beginning.
Yeah. I just thought Raven when I heard it. Another thing I wrote as well is Nick Patrick refereeing. He looks like the fella from Eastbound and Down.
Eastbound and Down.
Sorry, have you ever seen like Tropic Thunder or anything like that?
Oh, not for a long time.
So, well, either way, you know the bloke who blows stuff up?
Yeah.
Him, essentially. That's what he looks like. So, yeah, no, that's, I always comment on that whenever I see Nick Patrick. I wrote again, Hogan really overdoing being a heel in this match. Test of strength to start. Sting really in tune with his character throughout this match, which was good. He kept himself very mysterious. He didn't play up to the crowd.
He didn't show any pain or anything either.
Nah.
Which was kind of cool.
Yeah, no, definitely. Hogan in control early. Sting gets a drop kick. Hogan rolls to the outside. Hogan back in the ring. Then Hogan hits a shoulder block. Sting bounces off the rope, gets two drop kicks by Sting, and Hogan's back out again.
Back out again, messing with the crowd. I think there was like even a small, like boring chant after a while, if you listen back.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think there was, to be fair. And again, it's the main event of your biggest pay-per-view. And it just doesn't live up to it for where it should, where it is on the card, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Headlock by Sting. Hogan gets out. Hogan then regains control. Suplex by Hogan, which Sting no-sells and just pops straight back up. Sting unloads in the corner. Thumb to the eye by Hogan. They brawl on the outside. Hogan's in control.
Yeah.
Sting misses a Stinger splash on the railings. At that point, Tony Schiavone says Sting is the best ever. From my point of view, I don't know whether that's a valid call to make in this match.
Not this match.
No.
But commentators do that a lot, though. They always say that. It's like, oh, two of the greatest, or, you know.
Yeah, always say it. I can see why they've got to say it. You know, it's their biggest pay-per-view and it's their main event. Why wouldn't you say that?
Yeah, and they're two biggest stars, arguably, at the time, so...
Yeah, exactly. And then after that, you get a big boot from Hogan, followed by the atomic leg drop, and he gets a three count.
Yeah, this is where it turns a complete clusterfuck.
Yeah. Now,
what is going on?
Yeah, I don't know who messed up here, to be honest with you. But Brett stops the match and says, I'm not having this again. Restarts the match. Then the NWO come in.
Sting fights him off,
gets the Scorpion Deathlock, and then Hogan apparently submits and Sting wins the match after Brett calls for the bell.
Well, Hollywood, he does nod to say, I give up. He didn't tap. I did see him nod, saying I give up. But then Brett points to the bell and someone's ringing the bell and then that's it.
Yeah, I mean, three things I wrote after this match. Why did they need to bring in Montreal so close to it happening? There was no need for it in this match. Like, by all means, use it with Bret Hart at a later date, but there was no need for this match for it to happen.
It didn't have to happen then.
No, it really didn't. Ref count was fine. It wasn't a fast count. That's what I mean.
If he went like 1, 2, 3, then I'd understand it. But it was like it was a normal count. And when I watched it the first time, I was like, was he supposed to count to three?
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly what I thought, James. And then the last comment I made was, why not just have Sting go over at WCW's biggest pay-per-view of the year? Like,
and clean.
Yeah, just clean. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying WWE doesn't pull hokey finishes like this, but at WrestleMania, in a main event, you very rarely see these hokey finishes. They're always, if you want your hero to win, they win. There's none of this bollocks that WCW does.
Yeah, it's a clean finish, middle of the ring. That's it. The better finish would have been for Hogan to hit the leg drop, to Sting to kick out, and then Hogan to start kicking off, walking around the ring going, oh, what? How did he kick out? And then he stands up, fights back a bit, and then ducks a clothesline, hits a Scorpion Death drop, and then that's it. Then count to three.
Yeah.
We didn't need Bret Hart running around saying, I'm not having this again, when I don't even remember the first time that happened.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, they're obviously talking about Montreal, aren't they? Because this is about 2 weeks after it happened. But the problem
is, it's just a cheap knock.
Yeah, it's at the time WCW trying to be like, oh, look, we've got this superstar who Vince McMahon treated so badly on his way out, and we're going to focus the ending to our big pay-per-view on that as opposed to, you know... 18 months of this story. Imagine if Montreal doesn't happen. Like, how do you end this match then? Do you know what I mean? It's like, where's the long-term booking for that? Did they literally turn up on the day and Hogan, as he had creative control, went, oh, do you know what? Let's finish it like this. It's WCW never had a long-term plan.
It was always like, what are WWF doing and how can we hurt them?
Yeah.
But not watching their own product?
Yeah, exactly. And... even at the end where you had all the babyface WCW guys coming in to lift Sting on their shoulders and celebrate, that could have been such a better moment if you don't have this clusterfuck of a finish.
With a finish that just kind of felt like it was pulled out of nothing.
Yeah, exactly. It was just a bit. It was anticlimactic. It was a bit of a spit in the face of people who at the time would have paid a lot of money to watch that pay-per-view, to watch Sting win. And then when he wins like that, and I believe the next night on Nitro, he had to give the belt back.
Yeah, it was. He had to vacate it or something weird. It was a very strange time for WCW. Very strange booking going on.
And then didn't, as far as I know, he won the belt the next month anyway. So, like,
yeah.
Again, I mean, I don't understand. I mean, because of that finish mainly, and as you say, how slow the match was, I gave it a 4.5 out of 10. I couldn't give it any higher than that, to be honest with you. I thought it was fucking terrible.
No, I gave it a 4.
You gave it a 4?
Flat out 4 out of 10, that one. It was just so bad. Yeah. Before we move, I was just going to ask you, actually, before we move on, what was your thoughts on the Montreal Screwjob? Did Brett screw Brett?
See, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, I can see where Brett was coming from, in the fact that, you know, Shawn Michaels at the time was a fucking nuisance, is the best way to put it. I mean, he was off his head all the time. You know, it was a very personal thing. But then on the other side, if you're Vince McMahon and, you know, WCW is pulling a lot of dirty tricks at the time, you know, they're giving away your results every Monday. Again, they're getting your women's champion to come in and drop the belt in a bin. That was pretty fresh at that time. Now, I don't think Brett would have done it because I think Brett's got a bit more dignity. And as Brett said before, he never really wanted to leave WWE. It was just the fact that Vince couldn't afford to pay him anymore at the time, which is crazy when you think about it. But it's a shame there wasn't a compromise.
Yeah.
It'll always be a dark moment in wrestling for the fact that Bret Hart's career, the moment that happened, his career was stellar. I love Bret Hart. I can't wait to do a podcast on Bret. And from that moment, such a great career just went out quietly, if you know what I mean. He didn't get a big moment or anything like that. And I think Vince done what was right for his company. But it's always a shame that someone like Brett, who wrestled for him for 15 years at that point, got treated so badly. That's probably the best answer I can say about it. I mean, about you? What do you think?
Well, I was on the other side of the coin. I believe it's his fault, and people still go when I say that. But you got to think of it from Vince's side. You got, I know Shawn Michaels was despicable back then. I know he was terrible. People hated his guts, but he was carrying that company at the time. His innovative style and what he was doing. And then on the other side, you've got Bret Hart hanging onto that belt saying, I don't want to drop it in Canada. When I think that was like the day his contract ran out or something.
Yeah.
And then he's going, oh, but the next night on Raw, I'll come out, give you the belt and say, I can't work here anymore. I'm leaving. Vince has got to be thinking, well, I can't let him leave with the belt because he could just easily walk to WCW and do what Medusa did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So he's got to think, hang on, I've got to do something here. So I don't... It's fault on both sides. I'm not going to say it's all Brett's fault, but I think Brett could have helped himself a lot more to... Yeah. You know, if he lost it, like, clean, it might have given him a bit of a sympathy as well, moving into WCW.
Yeah,
and some fans might have followed him. So there's a lot of intricate like little bits going into this screw job, but I believe it is mostly his fault for how he was acting, saying I'm not dropping it in Canada. Mm. It doesn't matter if he asks you to drop it, you drop it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. At the end of the day, in any walk of life, if you know my boss turns around to me tomorrow and tells me to do something, I do it because he's the one that pays my wages. It's as simple as that.
Exactly.
Whether I'm leaving or not, there's a professional way to go. The other problem that Brett had, I mean, I've been watching the Monday Night Wars documentary and basically it's fucking brilliant. When you get a chance to watch it, watch it.
I've got on DVD actually, yeah.
But Brett literally, he turns around and he says he didn't like the way the product was going. Now, as WWF was moving into the Attitude Era, Bret Hart wasn't moving with their direction. So he was the expendable one out of him and Shawn Michaels, easily. And at the end of the day, Vince could have turned around and told him to drop the belt to anyone. You drop it. You can't have your personal feelings. I mean, I'm not being funny. Look at it this way. Brock Lesnar ended the streak this year. Most people have seen it on YouTube videos. Them two have a genuine dislike for each other. And at a UFC, I believe, they squared up to each other. There's genuine hatred. Undertaker still turned around and was like, all right, if he's got to beat me, he can beat me. So there's professionalism, and I think Brett wasn't very professional, and unfortunately his career didn't end the way it should have because of that.
Well, yeah, after that, after he went to WCW, WCW didn't know what they had or what to do with him.
That's the problem with WCW, because WCW's roster, really, in 1997, the addition of Bret Hart should have been what tipped them to victory. But yeah, Unfortunately, the powers that be were too focused on NWO, mainly. Unfortunately as well, you have people like Kevin Nash and Hulk Hogan who had creative control of their characters. So Bret Hart's just lost in limbo. I mean, I've heard somewhere in a shoot interview, after Owen Hart died, and he came back on a Nitro to thank the fans for their support and everything and said he'd be back in the ring soon. Eric Bischoff wanted Bret Hart to go in the ring that night because he was in Canada, turn heel and slate the fans. Now, just idiots that run the place, you know?
Yeah, it's just a bunch of, like, too many... What's the phrase? Too many chefs in one kitchen?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, too many chefs. No, that's exactly it.
Because with the NWO angle, the NWO killed WCW. Let's not get that wrong.
Yeah,
when you got Hogan and Nash and, you know, a little bit of Hall, like, throwing a world title around like a hot potato between a very small collective amount of people, when they had talent like at one stage, they had Chris Jericho, they had Eddie Guerrero, they had Dean Malenko, they had Rey Mysterio,
Booker T, Benoit,
even Jeff Jarrett, I think, is criminally underrated even now. Goldberg.
No, that's what I mean. They did have a good roster of people. I mean, the Goldberg thing as well. I mean, as far as I know, with Goldberg as well, him dropping the title to Nash was because Hogan didn't want him with the belt anymore. So instead of Hogan directly doing it, he got Nash to do the dirty work, which is why you had the infamous poke to win the title.
Oh, the finger poke of doom, yeah.
The finger poke of doom, exactly. And again, it's just signs of why WCW is such a terrible fucking company. I mean, the shoot Vince Russo does, worked or not, at Bash at the Beach, was pretty fucking spot on, to be honest with you. Especially talking about Hogan. And that's why I don't like Hogan. I think Hogan really needs to just fucking step, like, especially nowadays, no one really cares about him anymore, but he wants people to care. He harps on the fact that in 85 to 95, he was the biggest thing in wrestling. Yeah, you were, but you was a very fucking average performer, and you're now in your mid-50s, late, early 60s. You're not relevant anymore. No one cares if you're training to have another match because no one wants to wrestle you. That's the way I look at it, anyway.
Well, yeah, because he even got a title run in the early 2000s at WWE.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, how pissed off must the talent have been? Because he couldn't do much.
Nah, he couldn't. And in fact, do you listen to JR's podcast?
Yeah.
I mean, JR's podcast, when he interviewed Angle, Angle said he was fuming that year when Hogan came back and got a main event spot with The Rock and he had to fight Kane, because the year before, 2001, to that WrestleMania, Angle was arguably the best performer in WWE that year. And he's in a lower card match whilst Hulk Hogan's come back, fucked over your company many years, tried to put you out of business, gets put in a main marquee match. I'd be pissed off if I was one of them stars. Very much why I can understand why CM Punk's got a bit of the ump with the way he was treated towards the end as well.
because it was like his year for 2 years, and they just would not put him in the main event of Mania. They just would not do it. No matter what he did, no matter what kind of match he'd done, you know, they just wouldn't do it because he was too, Vince was too in love with his fantasy of Cena and The Rock.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've said before on a podcast years ago, in fact, on the CM Punk podcast, I said it. My fault was that WrestleMania where he fought Undertaker, that should have been for the title.
Yeah. Personally. That'd have been so, because I think people were saying it was like day, it would have been day like 400 of his reign or something.
500, day 500.
500?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, 500. What yeah. a perfect time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly, exactly. I mean, the other one as well, I thought mid 2013, especially when Punk came back and had his match with Jericho at Payback and then his match with Brock. I don't understand what the thought process was behind Randy Orton Batista in the main event. I can't understand that.
I don't understand the thought process. And looking back, Punk was right because he kept facing people that were leaving.
Yeah. Yeah.
Faced against The Undertaker, he was gone the next night.
Yeah.
Faced against Brock beat him. He was gone. Punk was there the next night. It just kept going on like that, and it just didn't make any sense. How can you build on that?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, for me, WrestleMania 30, I said in a June to a couple of mates, MB and Marcus, I said they should be building towards Daniel Bryan, CM Punk for the title at WrestleMania. I don't know how they could have got there, but they surely would have been a window they could have done it.
They could have just done it and fans would have like applauded. It wouldn't have mattered. Didn't even need build up because they did the match Over the Limit and oh my God, what a match that was.
Oh, it's phenomenal. Like when we covered that on the podcast the other week, like me and Envy both sat there and we said that was one of them matches we watched and was like, oh, fuck's sake, I resent having to take notes. I just want to watch what's going on in front of me. But before we go too off topic here.
See, CM Punk's even breaking the Kings of the Ring podcast.
Exactly.
As well.
Yeah, he's got a habit of fucking things up at the moment, hasn't he? Yeah. I mean, we'll go to your match choice next, which was Sting Jarrett, 2 out of 3 falls.
Yeah, a little gem I found.
I mean, why did you put that in there, just out of curiosity?
Why did I choose it? I was just watching through, because obviously when you get the DVD set, I went straight to the Crow disc. And I was just literally just watching all the matches and all the transitions he went through, like the Wolfpack, Sting, and, you know, stuff like that. Then this match came up, and it was for the number one contender spot. Mm. And I just really enjoyed it. It was like pay-per-view quality, but on TV.
Right, yeah.
So that's why I went for it.
I mean, one thing I'll say about that, I mean, you've just mentioned Sting... Wolfpack Sting. Could you imagine The Undertaker joining DX, for example?
No, because it wouldn't work.
Exactly, and it was the same with Sting with the NWO. He was meant to be the shining light of WCW, and that was when the NWO killed the company, when they split them and made 2 NWOs. And then, you know, Sting and Luger, who were WCW guys, get put in the NWO.
It was weird. The whole roster was NWO, and then they had to split the roster in half between red and white and red and black. And
it was just overkill at that point.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, all the mystique that Sting had built up for himself went from that moment, for me anyway, as a fan, because it was like, yeah... I mean, at the time, don't get me wrong, I thought the NWO Wolfpack was pretty cool. You know, I did. I was younger at that point. But looking back on it now, I just think, what a terrible fucking idea. Like, how can you let Kevin Nash and Hulk Hogan fucking pull your ear and go, oh, do you know what would be a good idea? Let's split the NWOs and have a fucking war.
Have a gang war. Yeah,
no one cares. You know, that's the way it is. I mean, first comment I wrote was Kinney. Choke on them slap nuts.
Just because of that T-shirt. Yeah,
just because of that T-shirt. It just made me think of Kenny. What music was Sting's? I never remembered this one.
I don't know. I don't know if it was like a... Was it like a remix or something? Because the eerie entrance disappeared, didn't it, after a while?
Yeah. Again, like as I say, I mean, if you don't put him in with a wolf pack and you just kept him with the music that he had... at Starcade, he should have kept that throughout his WCW career, because that was very unique to everyone else in the company. A bit like, you know, Flair with his music would never ever get changed. Michaels should have been the same as Sting, in my personal view.
Just rolling back a bit to the Starrcade build up, because it was all like NWO wanted him, but he wouldn't give a straight answer, and then he wanted Hogan title match instead, because he was pro WCW.
Yeah.
And then he'd turn him around and say, oh, you're going to join the Wolfpack.
Mm.
But, like, why didn't you just keep the same thing as before?
Yeah, and in fact, the person they went who wouldn't go with either was Diamond Dallas Page. Like, surely you could have put DDP in with the Wolfpack. Cause he wasn't.
Easily.
Yeah. Like, you just swapped them two and it would have made sense.
Promos
at the beginning, obviously, between the two of them, because it was made on the fly. Quite weird that this is a match on Thunder as well, isn't that? Like, they're SmackDown, I believe.
Yeah, kind of like, because Nitro's like their flagship, because it was on Monday, you know, hence the Monday Night Wars, and then they had the Thunder.
Yeah.
Later on, so, but yeah, it was a weird time to book it, because this could have easily been on Nitro.
Yeah, definitely. Stevie Ray on commentary as well, I never remember that.
Yeah, he's not actually that bad, to be fair to him.
He wasn't actually, to be honest. Getting the match started, big shoulder block by Sting. Sting's in control early on in the match. Rolled on the outside. Suplex on the stage by Sting after he walked him on the way up the aisle to do it. Jarrett gets in control. Sting fights back, gets a big clothesline from the top, which... kind of weird, especially at the time when you think that Taker and Kane were using that. I never saw Sting use it. I don't know if that was a point where they were both companies was like, oh, I see someone's doing that, we'll use it, sort of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I did. It wouldn't surprise me if they did, but I was thinking, it's in my notes, I'll probably talk about it later on anyway, but the Sting was basically WCW's answer to The Undertaker.
Yeah, he was. I mean, the latest episode of the Monday Night Wars that's been on the WWE Network was about Sting and Undertaker, the only two who didn't jump ship and were loyal
to the end. Yeah,
and could be relied upon by their respective companies, basically, because both had the chance to jump throughout the Monday Night Wars, and they never did.
Fair play to them, because that must have taken some willpower to do that, because other wrestlers would be like, yeah, sweet, I'm out. More money? Where do I sign?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that definitely shows you the integrity of the pair of them, for sure. Because, to be fair, I think if, say, Sting came to WWE in 2000, he might have got a bigger run. You know, he might have had a bit of a... It might have been a better time to move, as opposed to when WCW went out of business and he decided not to go, if you know what I mean. If he'd have gone during the Monday Night Wars, he could have been something quite key to it, for sure. But anyway, back to the match.
Yeah, the flying clothesline was followed up by a splash, I think it was, as well, from the top as well.
For a close count.
Yeah,
And then does he miss the Stinger splash and there's a gets the ref? Is that right? Or
no, he's setting up for the Scorpion Death Drop and Jarrett grabs the ref and pulls him into Sting before hitting a low blow.
Yeah, that's it. And then
hitting the stroke for three.
What do you think of that as a finishing move?
It's a bit weird looking. I wasn't sure what it was.
I'll be honest with you. I think it's a fucking terrible.
Yeah, it's a bit weird looking because I was like, well, "What's he just hitting with?" And he's got, "Oh, it's a stroke." I was like, "Oh, okay."
Yeah, it's just a skull crushing finale, isn't it?
Essentially.
and then there's a
10-second break for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, that was a bit strange as well, to be honest with you. Jarrett seemed obviously in control now after he's cheated to gain control. Then he goes, this I found weird, he went for a sunset flip and Jarrett blocked it, hit a punch, and then Sting got it anyway to get the three count for 1-1.
Yeah.
That I found that quite a strange spot, in the fact that I thought he could have just got the... could have just got it in the first place and got the free count, as opposed to having the false, is he going to get it, is he not? You could have just got it and just sort of like a quick fall out of nowhere, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, unless they were going for like, he's still caught with it, even though he's punched him in the face, kind of thing. I don't know. It's a weird, it's a strange one.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, even though he's punched him, he's still trying, so he got caught. You know, it's something like that. Bit of a weird spot, I agree, but...
Yeah, yeah, no, that's it. Then Sleeper by Sting.
Then the Sleeper by Jarrett, and then the Sleeper by Jarrett. Sting.
Yeah. Yeah, Sleeper by Sting. What did I write? Arm drop, not seen that. Oh, sorry, when he's got him in the sleeper, the ref doing the arm drop.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in fucking years. I quite like them spots. I used to really like them as a kid. Because you always knew the comeback was coming. I thought that's a nice heel babyface dynamic, which doesn't get used these days. I know you don't necessarily need to use it these days, but it was very nice to watch in the ring, if you know what I mean. It was quite good to telegraph anyway.
Yeah, the fans start rocking and then they feel the comeback coming on, which starts exactly shaking his arm and like getting up to his feet and then bang with the elbow and then that's it, he's on.
Exactly. I think that's the thing. It gives you a chance to build the crowd up for it. It's the same as in tag matches where you have building for the hot tag, the person on the apron just, you know, kicking the apron or hitting the turnbuckle or something to get the fans going. That's not done enough these days, in my view.
No, they've lost their way a lot. I think they, without WCW or any credible competition, WWE just don't care now.
I mean, when you get a chance to listen to the Austin McMahon podcast, Austin very much pulls him up on that. Suplex by Jeff Jarrett. Heads clash. Then Sting falls and headbutts him to the nuts.
Hits him on the slap nuts.
Yeah, Sting fires up, Stinger splash, but he pulls the ref in front of him. Then he gets the Stinger splash and Jarrett.
Didn't he hit two refs?
Yeah, he does. He hit two refs?
Yeah. No, he's right. Yeah, he hits the ref that Jarrett is in the block, and then he hit Jarrett, and then he hit Jarrett and the ref again.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And then Sting gets a Scorpion Deathlock. Jarrett's tapping out, no ref. But Sting wins after calling for the bell.
Yeah, this is a bit of a weird one. Why is Sting calling for the bell?
Yeah, what? I mean, what's that finish all about? Like, there's no... What's the bet? I mean, there's no logic to it. Do you know what I mean?
No.
That's the best way to say it. You could have had one of the refs that's taken a bump come up and spot him tapping out, maybe. That would have made more sense. It's very much the inmates running the asylum. WCW is the best.
Yeah, it was. Either that or Bret Hart was running late and Sting just thought, nah, fuck it, just ring the bell. Just, you know.
Bret, you missed your cue. Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I mean, what did you give that match, mate?
I give that... Can we do decibel scores on this?
Of course you can, yeah.
I'd give it a 6.5. I was going to give it a 7, but the finish was just too out there for me to get.
Fair enough. I mean, I gave it lower than that. I only gave it half marks. I gave it 5 out of 10 because of that finish. The finish really took away from the match for me.
Yeah.
As far as I know, they had a good match. They had a couple of good matches in TNA for the years. But again, not watching WCW. I'm watching these matches from just a match point of view as opposed to backstories and stuff like that. But I thought the finish was a bit strange and it took away from me.
No, that's fair enough.
Speaking of TNA, we shall go to Sting versus Angle at Bound for Glory in 2007.
That was a smooth segue. I like that.
Yeah. I can occasionally pull these out. I mean, TNA at this point was a good alternative to WWE. I'm going to go on record and say that. I think... Weirdly enough, the moment Bischoff and Hogan came in is when TNA started fucking dropping downhill for me.
Oh, without a doubt, because Hogan was just like, yeah, give me the money, give me the money, give me the money. Oh, here's my daughter, Brooke, to take more money.
Yeah.
He just, everywhere he goes, the company just starts to go down very quick.
And they're still recovering from it now. I mean, that's half the reason they've lost their fucking...
Spike, wasn't it? Yeah, Spike didn't renew the deal. Yeah, what are they going to be on now? Like Air, what was it, Air America or something?
Destination America, I believe it's called.
That's the one, yeah.
I mean, it doesn't affect us, obviously. It will always be on Challenge over here, so we don't really miss it.
No, we're all right. It's not moving for us, so we're fine.
But because of, you know, Hogan's call to take him on the road when the Impact Zone was still fucking producing good atmospheres, dropping four pay-per-views a year, they just don't make the revenue. I don't understand the four pay-per-views a year thing either. I think it does make sense to have a pay-per-view a month because you can build story from it, you know?
Well, yeah, because you can get the 4 weeks of build ending at the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Makes
yeah.
sense, because it's very hard now to drag a rivalry out for, like, what, 3 months a year?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, I mean, I know you kind of make your TV show special by having title matches and title changes on it, but at the end of the day, for a wrestling fan, you want to see it on pay-per-views the majority of the time. The occasional Raws and stuff where titles change hand or Money in the Bank and stuff is always great, but in actuality, you want to sit there and watch a pay-per-view and watch titles change. That's my view anyway.
Yeah, no, I get that. But yeah, the occasional shocking moment on Raw, like a title change or a Money in the Bank cash in, yeah, by all means. Mm. But for the main part, it has to be on the bigger show.
Yeah.
Or the biggest show in the company.
Yeah.
For those moments. Otherwise, it gets watered down. It doesn't have the same impact as it did before.
Mm. Yeah, no, I agree with that, mate. I mean, another thing I'll quickly ask you about. What do you make on... do you think Rollins will cash in at Mania?
I hope so. My fantasy booking was going on like... what was it? Reigns against Lesnar.
Yeah.
Whether it happens or not, I don't know. Mm. Reigns barely, and I mean barely, wins.
Yeah.
Rollins cashes in, gets the title, standing tall WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And then the fans will be going buzzing for the next night at Raw, because that's the big moment. That's the shock moment. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Reigns had the title and then gone.
Yeah.
In a minute.
That's the exact same booking I went with as well. I think that's probably the one that makes the most sense, because Rollins is definitely ready for a title, if you know what I mean. Reigns, maybe not so much. But if he has that moment and he loses, then...
Yeah. If Rollins... Yeah, if he steals the moment.
Yeah, he's in chase mode, and suddenly fans will get behind Reigns, and it gives him a bit more chance to tweak his character and stuff. I still reckon by SummerSlam next year, you will have all three members of the Shield in a triple threat match for the title. Don't know who will be champion, but I could see that main event in SummerSlam next year anyway.
God, I hope so. Because, I mean, bloody hell, if Luke Harper's ready for a title, I think Rollins is, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, definitely. Completely agree with that. Well, either way, back to TNA and Bound for Glory. They dub it as a dream match, which I suppose at the time it would have been. And I really like the tail of the tapes they do at the beginning of the match. Like, I think that adds something where a promo always adds something. I love a promo before a match, but a tail of the tape adds that, just that little bit more.
Yeah, when they're reading out all the stats and all their accomplishments, it does add to it, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And Envy will like this. It's a personal rivalry after Angle stalks Sting's son. Personal rivalries are always great for wrestling. Big fight film, yeah. I wrote. Sting's TNA theme music I wrote is better than WWE's one.
No, come on, now you're pushing it now. But the thing, I don't mind once Sting's WWE theme actually kicks in.
Yeah.
I think it's actually pretty good, but you have to listen to it with headphones.
Right, okay.
Now that sounds weird, but there's a lot going on in that theme.
Right, okay. All right.
But no, the TNA one's just like some nutter at the back on a guitar.
Well, I mean, my next point is shame Angle's isn't. Because Angle's WWE music is still one of my favourites of all time. I fucking love Angle.
Yeah.
Angle is in phenomenal shape for this match as well, isn't he? Like, he's...
That's like the best shape I've seen him in.
Yeah.
And donkey shoes.
Do you know why that is? Because at the time, Dana White is trying to get him to go to UFC, and he's contemplating going to UFC, and... For all the UFC fans that slag off wrestlers, there is a reason that CM Punk's been signed. There's a reason they're trying to get Brock Lesnar back, and there's a reason they made a play for Kurt Angle, because the amount of fans that will come over to UFC based off the back of them three will boost it. Because since Lesnar's left, they have, I mean, not fully because of Lesnar, but obviously people like Chuck Liddell have left, and Tito and Rampage, their pay-per-view buys have been dropping for the last couple of years. You look at the buzz.
They've lost all their big names, pretty much, haven't they? Because Couture is out the door as well.
Yeah, yeah.
He's gone. Who are the big stars at the moment? Because I've been a bit in and out of UFC. The only one I know of is Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, mate, I'm the same. Do you know what? Like, I watched it a few years ago when you had, like, your Chuck Liddell's and Rampage fighting and stuff like that. But I don't mind UFC, but it's, you know, it's hit and miss for me. I don't mind it. I can watch it. But, you know, it sounds weird. It's a stupid theory because it's the same in, like, people that don't watch wrestling turn around. It's like, oh, it's people in fucking underwear fighting with their tops off or whatever. I kind of, if I want to watch a cage match, I want to see them beat the shit out of each other, not stand there circling for ages. Like, I get bored of that.
Yeah.
But then I'm not a UFC fan. So for me, the same way people who don't watch wrestling don't understand the art form that wrestling is, I don't understand the art form that UFC is, if you know what I mean.
Well, yeah, it's the... Well, the thing is with UFC, I used to watch it quite a lot some years ago and had, like, Forrest Griffin and Stefan Bonner going through, like, three blood-soaked rounds and stuff like that.
Great match, that one. That was the final of the Ultimate Fighter, wasn't it?
Yeah, amazing fights like that. That's what drew you... Ronda Rousey's actually drew my attention again because she's a hell of a fighter as well. But apart from that, there's no top guy anymore. So I think that's why they brought Punk in for it sounds weird because I'm using a wrestling term, but it's for draw.
Yeah.
And you can imagine what he's going to be saying before the fight as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you want to listen to that.
Look at already, the moment Punk signed and said he was going to be going into the middleweight division, Bisping straight away turned around and went, "Welcome to UFC, Punk, I'll fight you whenever." Because fucking Bisping knows he's going to get a hell of a fucking payday if he fights CM Punk.
Especially if he beats him as well.
Yeah, he's going to get a huge payday. He's going to get a bigger payday fighting CM Punk than he probably would if he fights whoever their champion is in the middleweight division because of the amount of fucking pay-per-view buys that will happen when Punk's on TV. You know, at the end of the day, there's a reason Brock got fast-tracked and into a title match in his third match. Was because of the fucking pay-per-view buyers. He is, as far as I know, he is their biggest pay-per-view draw in history. Now, it says something about Brock Lesnar, and it says something about the power of WWE fans, to be honest with you, because they will follow him wherever, you know.
One thing I got hacked off with, though, I was just thinking, because Couture came back and won the title again, and he was like over 40, and no one could beat him for it.
Yeah.
I was a bit pissed off at this because they threw Lesnar to him.
Yeah.
And I knew what was going to happen.
Mm.
I knew what was going to happen. I just thought that's such a dick move.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, Dana's a promoter the same way Vince McMahon is. The only thing is you can't predict what's going to happen in a cage, to be honest with you, because anyone can land that good punch, to be honest with you.
One good shot. Yeah.
You know, fucking, do you remember when Matt Serra knocked out Sam Pierre, for example? Sam Pierre's miles better than Matt Serra, but you get that one punch, you're out. Simple.
Yep. Get one shot. But yeah, sorry, we got CM Punk again.
I'm having tangents with you the same way I have tangents with Envy. It's not a problem.
I was thinking CM Punk's wormed his way back in again.
He has. Yeah. He's got a habit of doing this, isn't he?
Piss off Phil.
Piss off Phil, exactly.
Yeah, get out of there. All right.
I wrote a nice start to the match as well. Some good technical wrestling by the pair of them. Sting gets an arm drag. Angle rolls out of the ring. Angle back in, starts landing chops in the corner. Sting then gets his 10 punches in the corner. Again, that's something I don't see much in wrestling anymore. Drop kick by Sting, and then a clothesline to Angle that sends him over the top. Nice rest spot that as well. Brawl on the outside, Sting's in control. Back in the ring, Angle charges at him and goes shoulder first into the ring post, which never looks fun.
That was a dirty spear into the pole.
I'm surprised more people haven't separated their shoulder with that, to be honest with you. Oh, fucking hell. Couple of counters and then a release German by Angle to gain control of the match. And the thing I loved about it was Angle going back to the old days where he stuck his arms out and sort of wooed weapons. You know, like that angle, the cocky angle. I love
that. Yeah, it was a mix of the psycho angle and the dorky angle. It was nicely done.
Yeah, very much so. And again, because it's their biggest pay-per-view of the year, it's kind of what you do, isn't it, as a performer. When it's your biggest pay-per-view of the year, you do roll back the years and sort of give people that little window of, oh, do you remember when I used to be like this? And the fans appreciate that. You know, a bit like when Triple H fought Cena at a WrestleMania and done the DX suck it thing. Like, people appreciate that, but it worked well because it was WrestleMania as well.
Yeah, because it's paying homage to another time, which fans remember, and they appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I wrote Mike Tenay and Don West are doing a very good job on commentary throughout this match as well. Suplex by Angle for a two count. Body scissors by Angle, which he then turns into a side headlock. Sting fights out, runs off the rope, and then Angle hits a beautiful belly-to-belly suplex.
Yeah, that belly-to-belly throw was picture perfect.
They always are. I love Angle's belly-to-belly suplex. In fact, I'm annoyed no one in WWE does belly-to-belly suplexes because I feel like I miss them. Whenever I get to watch an Angle match for this podcast, I always enjoy the moments I get to see his belly-to-bellies. side chin lock by Angle. Then Sting fights up and both end up getting a double clothesline, which again is a nice rest spot because you don't need the headlocks and stuff like that all the time. Stuff like this is a good rest spot to give the crowd a chance to cool down before the momentum starts building up again.
Yeah, it's like to soak it in before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly, mate. Sting builds momentum and gets a spine buster for two. I think that's the first time I've ever seen him do one. But
I've never seen him do a spine buster. So that's new to me.
Yeah, exactly. Gets a Stinger splash. Follows that up with a bulldog. I wrote at this point, Sting's very much in control of the match. Goes to the top rope and then Angle does his exploder suplex, which again
looks phenomenal.
It's brilliant because he goes from laying on his back to the top rope so quickly.
It's literally like 2 seconds. He looks, he gets up, he runs over, bang.
Yeah, and gets a two count. Then he starts doing his three Germans and gets a two count as well. Pulls the straps down. Gets the ankle lock in. Sting reverses into the Scorpion Deathlock. Nice transition, that one.
It was, yeah.
Then, TNA goes stupid here.
TNA's writing, yeah.
Yeah.
What happens there?
Karen Angle comes down, at which point Kevin Nash comes into the ring, does a really poor clothesline. I mean, I can't stand Kevin Nash. He's a... Punk described him better. He's a charisma vacuum.
And a ratings killer. Yeah.
And Angle gets an Angle slam, but there's no ref because they're trying to get rid of Karen Angle. Ref comes back in, gets a two count. Sting's kickouts really have got a lack of effort at this point, I wrote. 450 by Angle for a two count. I know it botches a bit, but it's still pretty impressive.
Well, it looked like he got him with the knees to the gut, didn't it, when he did it?
Yeah, he was a bit too close to him, I think.
That added to it, because that literally made me go, ooh, you know, just like the crowd's going, oh, you know.
Yeah, and Angle doing a 450.
Yeah, just what?
Yeah, exactly. Angle then gets the ankle lock. Sting rolls Angle out of the ring into Kevin Nash. Gets a Scorpion Death Drop, but there's no ref. As the ref's making a count, Nash pulls the ref out. At that point, I just wrote, I hate Kevin Nash. Like,
I just hate Kevin Nash.
I just hate Kevin Nash. Like, there's a reason you're not in the main event, even in TNA, because you're shit.
And then you run out of Just for Men as well.
Exactly.
It's just how great can go.
Yeah, exactly. He's just, and he looks like he's a cripple as well, doesn't he, when he's walking. Like, he's got no...
speed.
He's just a prick.
He's just a deck chair. Just, the middle of the ring. Yeah.
Just a prick. And then Nash and Angle try jumping Sting. Sting ducks, gets a double clothesline. Angle gets a low blow. Gets given a baseball bat by Nash, I believe. Then he goes to hit Sting, which I think he does actually get Sting with it as well.
He does, you hear it. He tries to catch it. He misses and you hear the...
Yeah.
On his chest, but fair play to Sting, he just stood there and just grabbed the bat. He didn't Yeah. Didn't sell it, just grabbed the bat.
Exactly. And then, I mean, I wrote at that point, this is really overbooked now. Sting clears house, then he gets a Scorpion Death Drop and a three count. I wrote a good match. I wish it wasn't so overbooked, because if it wasn't so overbooked, I think this would probably get like a 7.5, but I've given it a 6.5 just because of the overbooking at the end.
Yeah, it got a bit messy again, didn't it? Sting and Angle both got opened up as well.
They did, yeah.
How did that happen?
I mean, Sting, I imagine, got opened up from the baseball bat to the head.
But it looked like it hit him in the chest from the angle. It must have caught him in like, the top of the head or something.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. It does look like it catches him quite hard.
And then Angle's on his back, and I see like a line of blood going down his head. I thought, what is going on in this match?
Maybe again, that was just sort of a blade job where he got hit by the baseball bat, inverted commas.
I was trying to get a bit of colour just for the effect.
Yeah, just for the effect. I mean, as I say, I mean, I didn't think it was a bad match. I thought it was actually quite a good match and probably the best one out of the lot that we watched. But the overbooking at the end was just really unnecessary.
Too much going on with that Karen Angle coming out, and the Sting's got a restraint order against Karen Angle. Then Kevin Nash runs, well, not runs, briskly gets it to the ring.
It's very, very overbooked. Right then, mate. I mean, what were your scores for each match?
Well, I gave that Angle one a 6.5.
Yeah,
I gave the Jarrett 2 out of 3 falls another 6.5, so that rounds it off to a 13.
Yeah,
which is lucky because I could have got really awkward. I gave the Sting Hollywood Hogan match 4 out of 10.
Yeah.
What else? I gave Cactus Jack and Sting 6.
Yeah.
And I gave Flair and Sting 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. All right. Okay. So. Hang on, mate. Wait, one sec.
my phone. Kennedy's calculator died.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I've got it, I think. So, right, okay, fair enough. So your scores for all the matches were a 33.5. Is that right? Total score, if you just write that down for me.
Do you want me to get my calculator out and have a look?
Yeah, just double check it, mate. That's fine. That's not a problem. But, yeah, I mean... So, you know, to end note on Sting, I mean, for me personally, as I say, I haven't really followed his career. But from matches, he's, you know, I can see why he was a main eventer at the time, especially with how over he was in every match. But he was never the top, going to make the top ranking for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, I... was around his career when I was much younger. Because I used to have a WCW video, VHS, with like all the matches on it. And one of the matches was actually Flair and Sting from the Great American Bash.
Yeah.
And the other one was the Bash at the Beach, where the NWO was formed.
Yeah.
Just things like that. And then I was in and out of WCW. But then when it went under... I barely saw Sting for about 7 years after that until I heard that he was in TNA, and that's, I checked out some of his stuff there. Thought he's still putting in good work.
Yeah, I mean, he still put people over when he needed to. Like he put over AJ, I believe. You know, there was a few years where I think every single Bound for Glory, Sting won the title off of people. But by the time he left, he put over a lot of people before he left. I mean, he put over fucking... what's his name? EC3 before he left TNA, who was Derek Bateman, who couldn't get out of NXT. So it just shows what he's willing to do for the business.
Because he does it because it makes sense. Mm. When it makes sense, he'll put the other guy over to push them up, and then he'll do something else. He's a very underrated worker, because people in WWE probably slagging him off when he was in TNA at the time anyway, saying, he's too old, this, that, and the other.
Mm.
And then when he arrived at Survivor Series, they lost their heads.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a draw. You know, like, even now you can see why WWE have brought him back. I mean, I still very much doubt we're ever going to see Sting versus The Undertaker because...
Too late.
Yeah, it is too late. A mate of mine sent me a picture of The Undertaker at an American football game the other week. It just looks old and frail. Like, I know it's weird saying that because the bloke's nearly 7 foot tall, but you look at him and he's just an old man now. And even his match with Lesnar, you could see that his best years were gone, essentially, and it probably was the right time to end the streak. Whether people agree with it being Brock or not, different story, but it was definitely time for The Undertaker to lose and go off into the sunset, so to speak. But I guarantee you, Triple H Sting will end up being a good match. I'd put that on there for sure.
Well, yeah, Sting's got one more match in him. He's already said it. And Triple H can still go to a degree. So if done right, it can be a decent match and then Sting can hopefully get his win and then right off into the sunset and say, I've done it.
Yeah, exactly. Mate, what did you get with the scores of your matches?
Well,
mate?
My calculator's saying 31.
31. All right, we'll go with that then.
It's close enough.
It's close enough. It will go.
What's that out of 50, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is all right. It's okay.
Yeah, that's it, mate. Now, what would you give him promos out of 10, like in-ring promo?
Well, that's the thing, because he had two major personas. It's going to sound really weird. When he was Surface Sting, he was very energetic. He's very like, woo, and all that.
Yeah.
But what he was talking about, sometimes you couldn't feel it. You know, like he was just going a bit too loopy for his own good. But the weird thing is, when it was the Crow Sting, he didn't need to speak. He could tell the story of his eyes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then when he had the Wolfpack Sting, when Sting could actually start talking again, he was actually quite good because he was kind of like a heelish kind of promo guy. This is bloody difficult because he had so many bloody transitions. Do I have to give it for each one or just all together?
Just give it for each one. Like that's how we do it. We give him a mark out of 10 for promo.
All right. Off the top of my head, for the Surface Sting, I'll give him a 6.
Oh, no, sorry. Do it as an altogether. No, sorry.
Altogether? I'll give him a solid 8 out of 10.
You'll give him an 8. Okay, I've given him a 7 out of 10. Because, as I say, I mean, I haven't seen enough of him, but what I have seen of him, he can hold his own, that's for sure. He never bores me on the mic, but obviously he never stands out like some of the others that we've covered. Character. his character, or all of his characters, what would you give him out of 10? Mark out if you want, mate, it's not a problem.
I was just thinking because... It's because of like his overall success with Meteoric Rise for NWA and then WCW and only 4 years in the business getting a world title and stuff like that and then doing that tremendous transition to the Crow, which is the last ability of that on its own.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I mean, you heard the reaction you got at Survivor Series.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give it a 10.
Whoa.
Because it's lasted.
Whoa.
It's the same as The Undertaker. I'm giving it a 10.
You're giving him a 10, bloody hell, and that's character-wise, yeah?
Yeah, character-wise, Sting out of 10.
Well, success-wise, I mean, I've only given him a 6 out of 10, so I don't know a lot about his character. And for me, he's not one of my favourites. I don't mind watching him, but he's like average for me. That's me personally, so I give him
that's your opinion, that's totally cool.
Yeah,
For the overall success on mine, you think he had multiple world title reigns because he was in that small group of the people who actually had the title in WCW. Mm-hmm. When Hogan was doing 5 minutes of posing, Sting was putting in 20-minute matches, good matches.
Mm-hmm.
None of his matches were toilet break matches.
Yeah,
all of them you would watch for the entrance. You'd watch it for the match and the finish. You would watch it regardless, no matter who he was against and when it was.
Yeah.
So success wise, I'll give him a, because of the TNA thing as well though. The TNA was a bit rocky for me. I'm not going to lie. Some of his matches were great, but then I think of when he faced Mick Foley in a cage match, and I just think that was fucking awful. Mm-hmm. So I'll give him a 7.5 success wise.
Okay, I mean, I've given him a 7 out of 10, and the reason I've given him a 7 out of 10 is because he still hasn't won a big one in the WWE, and I think that is it's the essential of if you're a football player, and you're regarded as one of the best because you've won, say, for example, you've won League One, League Two, the Championship. If you've never won that Premiership. That
doesn't mean anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I give him a 7 out of 10 purely based on... He is very successful, you know. I think he's a 12-time world champion or something crazy like
that. He won bucket loads of championships.
Yeah. And obviously, he was the face of the number two company for years. So
well, it's a franchise.
Yeah. So you've got to give him high marks. I mean, the last one, his in-ring ability.
In-ring ability... overall.
Yep.
Oh.
So just his performance in the ring.
Yeah,
just
match.
That's
always always solid, always consistent. I'll give him some of the matches. You know, I'll give him a 7.
You give him a 7.
Give him a 7. Yeah.
Right. Okay. I mean, I'm gonna go lower than that. Because. He's not bad in the ring, but again, I just put him mid table. Really, I've given him 5.5 out of 10. I mean, in total, you've got 63.5 of, which is 10 more than what I've got. But if you go with an average score, he has got 58.25 on our leaderboard, which again is about middle of the pack with everyone we've done. So. Not bad. He's not at the bottom. He's not Diamond Dallas Page. But he's not Triple H or CM Punk either. So, no, that was good. It was nice to sit here and talk to someone who actually came out and asked us to do a podcast and you take the time out to come and sit here and do it with us, mate. So,
oh, no, that's no problem.
Very much appreciate it. I mean, you got anything going on in the pipeline with your podcast or anything like that, mate?
Kind of classified, but my podcast is coming back. We'll just say that much.
Right, well, let's go with that then, mate.
Yeah, I'm going to be cryptic like Steve Borden was on JR's podcast.
No worries, mate, not a problem. Yeah. Again, thanks for taking the time out to sit down and have a chat with us about Steam. By the time I edit this should be up tomorrow night, I would have thought.
Okay, cool.
And, you know, obviously listen away.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. It's been a long time coming because I thought the timing was perfect because of his debut and I've been waiting to do a podcast with you anyway, so.
Yeah, exactly, mate. Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you have got anything in the pipeline you ever need me, mate, just let me know and I'll definitely sit down and do it with you, yeah?
Oh, yeah, you're top of the list anyway.
Ah, wicked, wicked. So that's good to hear, mate.
You'll be there. Yeah.
I mean, just before I go, I'm just going to quickly plug... from mine and Envy's point of view, I'm on another podcast called Wrestling Matters next week. I'm also doing a retro roundtable on the 27th of December with the Sunday Seg guys.
You'll love that. What pay per view are you doing there? Do you know?
Rumble 92.
Oh, you're gonna have such a good time on that.
I'm looking forward to it, mate. I've got to say, you know, if it wasn't for being on Sunday Seg with you about 2 months ago, mate, we wouldn't be sitting down doing this now. So
yeah, exactly. So big respect to Sunday Segway.
Yeah, definitely. On that note, mate, as I say, I mean, look after yourself. If you think of anyone else at some point that you'd want us to do, let us know, mate. Yeah.
I'll think about it. I'll probably tweet you soon. Probably like later on. I'll just think of someone. It just comes to my head.
Yeah, no problem, mate. That's not a problem. All right.
All right, awesome.
All right, mate, nice one. Cheers, right.
Thanks, John.
Bye, mate.
Bye-bye.
Bye.